There was one image in particular. There were many, many images that touched me this past week. I saw a photo of four black men who are members of an organization called Touch Outreach. Touch stands for Teaching Our Urban Communities Hope. And in the photo, these four men were in Minneapolis, and they were standing guarding the memorial to Renee Good, who, as most of us know, was a white lesbian woman. They were just peacefully, quietly guarding it so it remained safe from vandalism. There was something about it that was just so beautiful. I went back to it over and over and over. I think we have to do that to remind ourselves that even in the midst of really difficult, very strange and challenging times, there are always good things happening. There are always good things happening. Last week, if you were here or you heard online, I talked about four different kinds of love. It's not a quiz, don't worry. Eros, romantic love, philia, this is generalization, the love of friendship that friends have, storge, which is the love between like a parent and child, and finally agape, which I would name as the love of humankind, a much broader, wider love. And I spoke about the role of agape in the ministry and the human rights work of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which of course is what we do every year around the time of his birthday, right? We step up, we do all these wonderful things in our reverence to Martin Luther King. But of course, we know that the work that he did and all the things he modeled is something that we absolutely need to be thinking about and practicing all year long. And unfortunately, we know it probably more than ever this year. Like Dr. King and all of you, of course, I yearn for a different kind of world. I yearn for it. I yearn for a world in which we can all just take a breather and not feel this endless call to action. But we have not created that world yet. We, everyone, all of us, we have not created that world yet. And so the work continues. There's a writer, you might be familiar, I've mentioned him before, his name is Jay Kuo. He has a really wonderful Substack. He's a writer, he's an attorney. He writes about current events in a very level-headed, very clear way, and believe it or not, he uses humor quite a bit. So I like to turn back to his writing on a regular basis. And this week in particular, in one of his posts, he talked about the need for nonviolent training, to be trained in the techniques of nonviolence, and also for the stamina that we all need at a time like this, the stamina that we need to actually develop in order to get through a moment like this in time, the work that we have to do individually in order to sustain ourselves as we go through these hard days. So there is the dream, and then there is the waking up and the being awake for the work that needs to be done. I am preaching to the choir, but I think we all need these reminders. I know I do. In his writing, Kuo said, many readers have asked what they can do beyond writing letters, calling their representatives in Congress, donating to campaigns and nonprofit relief centers. We are all aware of those. Those are very important things, to be sure, he reminded us, but we all need to do the inner work in order to carry King's dream forward, and then be prepared when the time, if the time comes, for our own direct action in a situation. The inner work is a critical part of it. And some of the things that he suggests doing is signing up for either locally or online for nonviolent training. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I haven't looked yet. Volunteer with rapid response groups or immigrants' rights groups in your own city or town. He said, there has never been a moment for mobilization like this in our lifetimes, and it will take all of us acting together to preserve our democracy. And I have to tell you, I'm just going to stop for 1 second and tell you, in the 10 years, 11 years that I have been a preacher, I really have never talked politically. It's not who I am. I really believe that everyone has their own ideas about life, their own worldview, their own call to action, whatever it is. And I really made a point of never mixing the spiritual component of life within an organization, a church, a meeting house, a congregation, and politics. But I think it's impossible today. It really is absolutely impossible to extract these things. I feel like Kuo's advice is very, very, very good in terms of the direct action that we can engage in, especially when we might be feeling helpless. It is the work of preparedness. One of the things that he references in this particular post that I read were the letters that Martin Luther King wrote from jail when he was in jail in Birmingham. And I thought, because of my own history, reading, schooling, I thought of the prophet Paul, who was writing letters from jail to the citizens of Corinthia 2,000 years ago. Sometimes I wonder why we still have to do these things. Why haven't we made more progress? King, like Paul, addresses the crisis of the time. Both of those people wrote about how to live faithfully in a hostile society. How to live faithfully in a hostile society. King wrote in that letter, in one of the many letters he wrote, in any nonviolent campaign, there are four basic steps. This is the concrete stuff. The first one he called the collection of the facts to determine whether an injustice exists. The second one he called negotiation. The third is self-purification, and then direct action. So there's a series of steps in the preparedness. We all know that Dr. King was a brilliant activist and that his writings are as relevant today as they were 60 years ago. And they remind us that it's going to take incredible patience and inner discipline to get through these difficult times. Quo wrote, and I thought this was spot on, nonviolence isn't easy or even natural for many people. When a violent oppressor attacks, it is basic human instinct to strike back. It takes discipline, inner strength, and spiritual stamina to meet violence with peace. This is the very work of being awake. Because I've often wondered, could I ever hit someone? Could I ever strike someone? Would I ever be moved to harm another human being with violence? I don't think I could. I couldn't possibly, I don't think. But then I remembered 35 years ago, I was driving south of Manchester, Vermont on Route 7. I had my 15-year-old brother in the car. I was 25 or so. It was a busy weekend. I think it might have been 4th of July weekend. So there was a lot of traffic. It's a two-way road. If you've ever been on it, it's a beautiful road, Route 7. And I was at the head of a long line of traffic. Well, actually, I must have been at the back now that I think of it. But I looked in my rearview mirror, and I saw a car coming at us very, very, very fast. And I thought, we're dead. This is it. My first thought was, we are about to get creamed. There were so many cars on the road, I didn't have time to think about what might happen. Instead of hitting us, the car veered around us and went directly into the line of oncoming traffic. And the first person in that line of traffic turned into our line of traffic, and so they were T-boned by the speeding car. I still to this day do not know what happened. I remember metal, smoke, glass, and I remember moving my car around, and somehow we were untouched in those moments, in that massive accident. And I pulled, I pulled the car over, I grabbed the blanket that I keep in the back seat, and I ran over to the car that had been speeding. It was way down in the grassy ditch. And when I got there, the doors were opening and beer cans were falling, lots of beer cans were falling out onto the ground. And the men in the car were falling out onto the ground. They didn't know what they had done. They had no idea what had just happened. And to this day, I remember feeling like if I had had a baseball bat in my hands in that moment, I probably would have hit someone with it. I was so angry. I was so, all of the adrenaline that was flowing through me, the fear, the rage. I do believe if I had had in my hand a bat, I would probably have hit someone that day. I ran over to the other car. It was a mother and a father and a teenage son who were visiting Vermont from Texas, visiting colleges. And the mother was really badly injured. The father and the son were pretty much okay. And I'll just tell you that I made a connection with that family that day that has remained for my entire life. We're friends. Her name is Charlotte. And when my sons were born, she made quilts for my sons. When I was married, she made a quilt for us. So out of something really, really terrible came something very beautiful. We remain in touch with letters and phone calls. And But I do remember the feeling of could I have harmed someone? And I've thought of it many times looking at the images that I'm seeing now. Quo wrote in the piece, he reminds us of some very important aspects of how to respond in times like this. He wrote, Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about vigilance more often and more urgently than is usually remembered. While the dream is what survives in public memory, vigilance was what he pressed on people in real time. And two, King warned everyone repeatedly against the illusion that progress happens on its own. I think sometimes it's a little too easy to think, well, it'll all come back around eventually. His line was, human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability. Human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability. It appeared in multiple sermons that he gave. He was always pushing back against complacency and the belief that history will naturally bend toward justice without sustained moral effort. Vigilance for King meant staying alert and awake to the ways that injustice reasserts itself when attention wanes. So staying awake, the idea of being awake and staying awake spiritually. It is a phrase that appears in many, many forms in sacred scripture, and it refers to the danger of coming spiritually lethargic, holding a belief that things will right themselves eventually, or even that the work can be done by someone else. In his sermon, Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution, delivered at the National Cathedral in 1968, King explicitly framed the moment as one requiring wakefulness. He described racism, economic exploitation, and militarism, sound familiar, as forces that thrive when people stop paying attention. He warned then that societies like individuals drift into moral sleep when comfort replaces conscience. King understood that vigilance is also emotionally costly, that the work itself can be very, very exhausting, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically exhausting. He spoke of despair as a constant temptation and named the need for inner resources to sustain outward action. I love this. Vigilance, he said, required spiritual grounding, community, and what he called a tough mind and a tender heart. And of course, as we talked about last week, he linked this vigilance directly to love, the agape version of love. His understanding of agape was that this love, this active, moral, community-centric love, required attention, honesty, and the willingness to confront reality without turning away. Stoicism, Sufism, Jewish ethical tradition, Buddhism, Christian monasticism, so many of our contemplative spiritual traditions emphasize the ongoing practice of wakefulness, attention, and moral clarity. But we have to remember that wakefulness is not just about having a contemplative life. It is an outward movement toward injustice and suffering, pointing out our collective responsibility to transform our society. The dream provides direction, vigilance, and spiritual fortitude carry the work forward. So I'm going to just mention, I'm going to leave today with four concrete ideas about how to use King's teaching in our daily lives. Four ideas. The first one is to translate despair into moral clarity. This is the work, into moral clarity. Whenever you feel helplessness arising, name exactly what feels wrong, because clear naming steadies our attention and grounds our response. So name it. Whenever you feel helpless, name what feels wrong. And then number two, shift from outcomes, the long way down, to responsibility right now. And ask yourself just one question. What does responsibility ask of me here? Let action answer it even when the outcomes remain uncertain. What is responsibility asking of me right here, right now? And number three, act in proportion, not in totality. Choose one action that fits your capacity today. It might be a conversation. It could be taking a training. You might make a donation, write a letter. You might offer your presence with someone who has been harmed. Completion of one act builds steadiness over time, builds a kind of steadiness, and it also mitigates despair. Finally, we know this, stay awake together. Collective wakefulness multiplies endurance. Stay awake together in community. We can't do this alone. Dr. Martin Luther King, in his speech at Southern Methodist University on March 17, 1966, said this: "For all too long, we have had silent onlookers, but now there must be more involved participants who solve this problem and get rid of this huge wrong of our nation. There must be a kind of divine discontent." I love that. Divine discontent. So I send you forward from here today into a snowy day with that. Cultivate within your hearts in these days ahead a divine discontent. Whose job is it to do the work to change our society? Every one of us. It's always ours. From beginning to end of a life, it's ours. And where does it begin? In our own hearts and in our own souls. Divine discontent.